Interview with Dr. George Collins, former director of the Cosmotron Project at the Brookhaven National Laboratory, member of the Stony Brook Council, and one of the three incorporators of the Stony Brook Foundation, at his wife's home in Bellport, Saturday, September 12th. 1987. When did you join the council?
How far back do you go?
Oh, well, I don't remember the date, but except for the fact that this was the first council, and I was appointed to this by Leland Hayworth, who was had been requested to appoint someone from the laboratory.
I see. All right. Who was the chairman, initial chairman of the council? Was that Ward Melville?
I'm afraid I don't remember. What was not Sullivan?
I don't know. I'm trying to find out who the first one was.
I can't tell you.
I see. Okay. All right. Who were some of the other members of the early
you
council?
You embarrass me, Carl. I will not be able to remember.
All right. Okay. Had the college on Long Island come to the present campus, or was it still in Oyster Bay?
Still in Oyster Bay.
Still in Oyster Bay. Well, presumably then this was around 57. Because it started in 57 there in Oyster Bay, and the council must have been appointed, and I assume it was appointed by Harriman.
It was?
Yes.
Yes. And in fact, one of my clearest recollections was my feeling that the appointments that Harriman had made were not well suited to the task. I'll put this in a diplomatic way.
Well, say why.
Yes. Well, they were not, they didn't understand what was needed to make a great university, and they were too politically inclined, and in my estimation, had not been selected with the view of assisting in establishing a new and important university. And I went to the trouble of visiting Harriman in Albany. I received an appointment. I made what I thought was an impassioned plea, which to which he responded not at all.
I see. Uh-huh. All right. What is your impression of the initial leadership locally? This was the Olson, Dean Olson, and anybody else?
I don't remember Olson's at all, really, but I remember Ward Melville, who was, his concept, this university was very different from what it actually turned out. He, as you may have heard, but thought this university, the architecture of the university should fit in with the architecture of Stony Brook, and was rather insistent on this. This is, of course, after it left Oyster Bay, and again, it was about to be established where it is now. And I think the first buildings were handicapped by this concept. The architects were not free to do what they thought should be done.
He had a conception of colonial architecture and Georgian style.
Yes.
And consequently, we got red brick.
Yes.
But do you know anything about what went on with regard to the selection of the architects?
No.
Because we had, there was some difficulty there. Boris Walker, for a while, was inspected some of the buildings. And they had been the architects for the telephone company. And had been recommended by the chairman of the Board of Trustees, State University. I've forgotten his name now. I don't know, was it Phelan? I don't believe so. All right. What were some of the principal matters that came up for discussion while with the council? How often did it meet, for instance?
As I recall, the meetings were called, as I recall, by Sullivan. And although there was a schedule of meeting maybe once every 2 months, he frequently called them more often.
Well, when I came in 62, Ward Melville was honorary chairman, and Sullivan was the acting was chairman. And I'm trying to find out whether that had always been the case, or whether Ward Melville had been chairman of the council.
I don't remember. I cannot remember ever attending a meeting at which Ward Melville was chairman. I can't swear that this he never was, but I don't think so.
I see. All right. What were some of the problems that the university had that you remember? What were some of the either issues or things that had to be done?
Well, the burning issue which occupied most of the time was to find a president. And this was, of course, the first and overriding problem of the council. It was the responsibility of that body.
That's
and,
right. That was its legal responsibility.
I don't
remember anything about the manner in which Lee was selected. John Lee was selected. He was the first president.
Isn't that strange? I mean, my recollection was that we were looking for a... Then he in some way left.
That's right. He left. He was fired, actually, by Hamilton.
Oh, yes.
But he had previously fired Olson.
Well, this must have been before they moved to Stony Brook.
Yes, 60 and 61.
Uh-huh. Well, my recollections begin when I was appointed by Sullivan to join him in the search for a president to succeed me.
Yes, all right. Go ahead.
We had great difficulties then, but we tried persistently. I can remember approaching Charlie Towns
in Harvard.
No, he was in Columbia.
He was at Columbia.
I can remember.
He was a physicist.
He was a physicist.
Yes.
And then I can remember talking with a man from Brooklyn Polytechnic Institute, a fine person who was an engineer, and he expressed interest, but did not accept.
Remember his name?
No.
All right.
No, I think a rather famous engineer. Then there were many more than of this.
I had heard when I came that Lauren Isley had been approached.
Yes, it's not that's likely, and some others. It went on for quite a while, and finally, I think Sullivan got a little discouraged, and so it sort of fell to me to carry the ball to a major extent.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to say I was successful beyond all belief. When at the meeting of the American Physical Society, I met with John Toll in the New Yorker Hotel, I think it was called in those days, mm-hmm. and explained to him the opportunity. And by this time, I was having been through this so many times, I was able to express it in specific and, I hope, convincing terms. And he accepted. And as you know, this...
When was this? Do you have any idea of the date?
American Physical Society, but I don't know which year.
I see. Had he ever been to the campus before?
No.
I see.
But I can now see that he did this because he was one of the few to recognize the opportunities which this presented. That is, I've talked with him in a good deal after he became president, and it was clear that he saw from the start that here was the important and powerful state in the United States, which in the past had depended on the private institutions to look after its boys and girls and give them a college education. But because of the increased number of increased need for a university courses and university degrees, these private colleges were no longer able to cope with it, and so the state of New York had to establish a university system. But its resources were considerable, its interest was great, and here was a chance to start something which you could really form it and establish it with high standards. And as you know, he was eminently successful in this.
John was, yes.
He began by getting very leading people.
Bentley Glass and Frank Gehry.
Yeah.
Those two.
That's right. And I think he, of course, wasn't present when he convinced these two that they should come, but I'm sure the arguments that I've just expressed, he used, and very effectively.
Right. We looked at John as first we had a line to be filled, and that line was the dean of the graduate school. And we hadn't filled it, and we now were beginning to have departments that had been approved for the offering of a graduate degree. The first two were physics and chemistry, and I think they'd already been approved by 62 when I came. The next one was biology. And from then on, we went department by department. And it seemed to me that if we were going to have graduate work, we should have a dean of the graduate school. And we had that line, was in the budget. And we looked at John first for that position. And I think he declined it. But he had come to the campus, and people had had a chance to see him outside the physics department.
Yes. I think, actually, he was brought to my attention by Alec Pond.
Yes. Well, they're two Princeton PhDs.
Oh, yeah.
Alec came as chairman of the physics departments in 62, the same year I did. And the same year Stan Ross did as chairman of the history department. So you don't remember much about the Oyster Bay days and the problems that arose there.
I remember the scene. I can remember the beautiful place, of course. And
yes.
And we would meet there. And I was much, wasn't very experienced in academic affairs. seemed to me that the discourse was not at the level that it should be, and I would have done it differently again, but as I was just a member, I sat there patiently, but I did suffer. Yeah.
Right. On cloud nine, or they didn't get down to brass tacks, or didn't show any concept of...
Didn't show an understanding of really what an opportunity this was, and were thinking of the institution in rather modest terms.
Yes. All right.
I think the institution owes a deep debt of gratitude to John Toll, who brought in these two people you mentioned,
right?
Yang and Glass, and to those who have shall be given.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. He called me up one day, Sunday in the morning, and it was just overcome with his enthusiasm, and announced that Yang had accepted.
Well, I think, what would you say the impact on the university's development was from Brookhaven, from the existence of the Brookhaven National Laboratory, so nearby?
Yes. I'm sure, very sure, that this was the presence of Brookhaven Laboratory was one of the reasons that Toll accepted the job, that is, he could see that this was going to influence the university.
Right. Right. I remember one of the first things I did when I came back to Long Island as head of the institution was to get the top people from Brookhaven. I got in touch with Maurice Goldhaber, and get the top staff, invited them to a cocktail party at Sunwood to meet our top people. In fact, there had already been some relationship established in one or two cases.
I think Brookhaven has done well in this regard. I just attended this meeting, sure-handed, and had a long talk with Andy Anderson.
Yes, I wish I've got to talk with him, too.
Well, you should, because I think he was... I really wasn't around when he was a chairman of the council. But he also expressed to me his disappointment at what he considered was the quality of the appointees by the government to this council.
Yeah. Andy was never chairman of the council, I don't think.
Yes, I'm sure.
Andy Anderson?
Yes. Recently, yes, I think he's just finished his term. I wasn't, but he was.
Well, all right. Well, I couldn't agree more. I had thought that the appointees by Harriman were better than the appointees by Rockefeller. But you dealt with the initial appointees.
I can't make the comparison, but I was maybe unreasonable, but I was unhappy with the appointments that were made by Harriman, except for the appointment that were made through Hayworth, which... I mean, he was, you know, Leland really appointed somebody who had experience with universities and was concerned about them.
Namely you.
Yes.
Yes.
And I was certainly concerned. And
yes.
I've been at a good university.
Yes.
But the others didn't have this motivation.
Well, it certainly was not... the council was not in the same category with the board of AUI.
Oh, no. Oh, I should say it's lacking the difference of day and night.
Right.
No, that's a good
think maybe the difficulty is that the council really doesn't have a very important assignment. It's supposed to look after the rules of the, well, a certain thing. It has to select the president, and it has to, it is concerned, I think, with the
student life.
Student life, yes.
And I don't think they ever really addressed that too well, did they?
Well, we used to talk about the rules which should exist in the dormitories, whether you, to what extent you mix the boys and the girls. And so,
yeah.
Of course, that brought along quite a divergence of opinions as to how this should be handled.
On the administrative staff of the university, did you meet and come to know?
Well, Tolan and Alec Pond.
And Alec Pond, yes.
Yeah. Mostly. Yeah. Well, I did, I had some,
you know,
Tolan used to give a very, very fine parties and in the evening, and these would be attended by Glass and other people, and those were good parties. I mean, high intellectual content.
Yes. Right. Did you know any of the people in the central administration in Albany?
No.
No. What was your estimate of Sullivan?
Sullivan.
Rockville Center. That's right.
Yes, and we would travel around and receive a rejection, and then he would invite me to have a drink with him. I remember he insisted on Tanqueray gin in his martinis.
Well, he was a good Irishman.
I would say that Sullivan would get a good mark for his intentions.
Well, he was a judge of the Superior Court.
Yeah. No, he was a good, honorable, responsible person.
Yes.
Who was not too familiar with universities.
Right. Where do I fit in the picture?
Well, Carl, I must say, you know, my memory is very poor, but somehow your role escapes me. I'm sorry to say.
I see. Down to Maryland to interview Johnny to see if he would be interested in the job.
Oh.
Sullivan asked me to go down.
When was this?
This was in, I think this was in 64.
Oh.
Johnny's name came to the top of a list that apparently the council had, that Sullivan had.
I was unaware of this somehow.
Yeah. And then
what did he indicate his intentions were?
I stayed overnight with him.
This is when he was head of the physics department at
Maryland.
Maryland.
That's right. And one of the first questions he asked me, why don't you want the job? told him that I didn't want it. You see, I was appointed. I joined the system in Albany as executive dean in the Albany office on detail to Stony Brook immediately for 1 year until I could find a president.
Oh, yes.
A week after I came on the job, Hamilton announced that he was resigning as of the end of December. This was 62. That left Frank Moore with the task of replacing Hamilton in Albany. And it took him 18 months to get Sam Gould, to find Sam Gould.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody would take the Stony Brook job until they knew who their boss was going to be in Albany.
Oh, yeah. Well, Gould was a good person, I'm sure.
I think on the whole, he did a good job, yes.
I see. So you think maybe that was the appointment of Gould was one of the reasons that Cole accepted?
I think Toll was already willing to take the job. He'd already indicated that he would be willing to accept. Sullivan wrote a letter to Gould saying, "Before you look anywhere else for a president at Stony Brook, you interview Toll," that he was the choice of the council backed by the faculty committee. I remember that Harry Porter, who had been president of
Fredonia, the teacher's college on Lake Erie that had the master's program in music, before he was called to Albany as provost. Oscar Lanforth down to the Stony Brook campus as a candidate for the position of president of Stony Brook.
Successor. And wanted the institution and the council and the faculty to look at this man. And the faculty was unhappy. He was a chemist. The faculty was very much opposed to him. In the way of incidents that you can think of. You were one of the incorporators, of the three incorporators of the Stony Brook Foundation.
I was a miserable failure, really. I don't know whether... Well, I tried to get...
I wouldn't say that.
Well, it was true. I really tried to interest people in making contributions, and I was unable to formulate an argument as to why, convincing argument as to why people should contribute money to an institution which is state-supported and has millions of coming in, and why should they make... But I did make a determined effort with a wealthy person by the name of Lee, who lived down here in Belport. An appointment with him. He and I went to Stony Brook and we met with John Toll and someone else, I forget who it was. And they, I thought, did a very effective job of showing him the campus and explaining to him the reasons why private contributions were important. But he didn't contribute. And I just,
commission was my idea. In this sense, the University of Buffalo, when it was incorporated into the state university system, had an endowment of about $30 million. And they had a foundation. And we needed funds that we could use outside and in addition to the lines which were rigidly prescribed in the budget.
Yeah.
We had no free funds.
Sure. Well, this, yeah, I could understand this. I tried to explain it.
Yes. And I got Ward Melville to agree